Rob Garcia is my guest. Are you familiar with ghosts? Have you lived in a haunted house? Do you know people who've lived in haunted houses, or have you ever gone on a ghost hunt, ghost watch, anything like that? Most people can say yes to one of the above, all right? Rob has been part of the Kansas City area ghost hunting, ghost hunting arena for maybe 15, I think you were saying 15 years or so, and with Elite Paranormal. And I met him a while back. We won't put any date to it. Doing the paranormal stuff. But he has a new project that I wanted to find out more about, and especially with coronavirus and people having to be stuck at home, and some people are finding they're stuck at home with not just themselves, but with a little extra curricular activity. This is a good time to talk about that and revisit that, because it gets us away from politics. Thank you. Anyway, Rob, thank you. I'm glad you're available and the kids aren't tying you down somewhere in a room.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
With your background of paranormal stuff, we got reconnected recently because there's a guy doing a documentary on Sigma Nu in Lawrence. So it was kind of interesting because you also have a new project, or a recent project, working on restoring Garnet House Hotel. Is it Garnet?
Yes, it's in Garnet, Kansas. We call it the 1858 Garnet House Hotel, but really in the history of the town, it was really only known as the Garnet House. We just tried to give it a date and give it kind of what its purpose was, because a lot of folks don't know. I mean, it's one of those little hidden historical gems that's out there that, you know, only has recently kind of come to light that we discovered.
I was looking on the website. What's Harry Houdini got to do with this?
The hotel ran as a hotel pretty much through the mid to the latter part of the 19th century. So it ended its run as a hotel around right about the beginning of the 20th century. So Harry Houdini and his wife, they used to travel around and do a spiritualist show before he was a famous escape artist. And back then, there was no other place to really stay in Garnet, Kansas. And the Garnet Opera House was one of the locations where they would stop off and do their show with his wife, Beth. And the only place to stay was the Garnet House. And it's said that they stayed there right at its tail end run as a hotel.
Oh, that's excellent. So that's a wonderful little piece of history.
That's really not documented out there, but it's been kind of locally told to me by many folks that, you know, have that word of mouth history. So, because it makes sense, because there was no brick, and right about then they had a brick hotel built in the town, and, you know, the Garnet House died off as a hotel during that late 1890s period. So, you know, right there at the end of that run, that's kind of when they were there.
Wow. The paranormal background, that part of it was, a very big factor when we were involved with the investigation of the Sigma Nu House in Lawrence, and mm-hmm. you do EVPs. So with the project that you're working on with the Garnet House, have you already had a lot of indications that there is more activity there than just the physical kind?
Yeah, I mean, you know, after doing paranormal investigations for near 20 years and so many, you kind of get that sense as you do these over a time, like when things are going down and when things are happening. So, you know, when we first purchased the place, and that was 3 years ago, my partner and I, we noticed right away that, you know, there was something about the place, because we went and visited with the realtor, and she was just talking away while we were kind of looking around, you know. And the place is 162 years old, so it's, you know, it's in rough shape on some level. But mm-hmm. so we were looking around, and all of a sudden the back door flies open, and you hear this little girl's voice, and the wind gust blows this through the room. You know, and me and my partner, who have both been involved in paranormal a long time, both look at each other, but the, you know, the realtor doesn't realize, because she's not exposed to these sort of things, that in what we just experienced. But we're kind of like, whoa, that's amazing. That was crazy, because we clearly heard the little girl's voice, you know. And then we shut the door and we just kind of continue on touring with the realtor. But after that, after we began to clear the building out, because the building was a doctor's office for 60 years of the 20th century. Mm. So, and it was filled still with a lot of the materials from that time. So we spent probably almost 3 months of clearing the building. And during that time, we noticed, you know, all kinds of things happening, you know, movement, things walking upstairs, walking down the stairs, talking upstairs, and there'd be nobody there but us. Mm-hmm. So we started leaving voice-activated recorders. You know, we had so much work to do that we tried not to investigate because, you know, as investigators, you automatically want to jump to that because that's just, you know, what you do. So, right. So we were just recording, getting voice-activated recorders and leaving them overnight and coming back and collecting them. And we were capturing all kinds of crazy talking sounds and sounds of something like tearing the room to pieces while we were gone. Mm-hmm. The sounds of like, it would be weird stuff like intermixed with like glass and water splashing and chain sounds and, you know, mumbling and talking and all kinds of stuff like that. And then, you know, but nothing moved, you know, it's all just there. So sounds of talking, screaming, all kinds of different things we were capturing during those voice activated recordings. My partner liked to put ping pong balls to see, you know, like, okay, well, we're hearing all this movement. Let's put these ping pong balls and see if, you know, they go moving while we're gone, just trigger object type things that you kind of do when you're investigating. We come back and you hear the sound of ping pong balls bouncing on the recorder down the bottom of the stairs, then back up the top of the stairs and somewhere else off in the distance and back near the recorder, yet ping pong balls aren't moved. So just little like, okay, it's like they're, you know, they know, like, okay, we know what you're doing and we're gonna tease you. So things like that, you know, but there's a lot of activity there. It's, you know, as an investigator for so many years, it's probably one of the more active places I've ever been, and I'm not saying that just because I'm involved with that place. It's just really amazing. Like, never, you know, I don't know if it had come out for me or, but you know, a lot of other people have experienced it now. Since, you know, we've started letting a few folks come in and investigate once in a while. So,
okay, so that's my next question.
Pretty amazing.
Was this the intention when you first, when you bought the property? Was that what you were hoping for?
Really, for me, no, because, you know, I've been involved with so many historic landmarks over the years doing their history stuff as well as their paranormal stuff. But, you know, I come from a history background. So for me, I was really more intrigued about the history of the location than saving the place, because I think if we hadn't jumped on it, it was probably going to get the wrecking ball. You know, the place was, you know, it's a little bit, you know, run down, hadn't probably been taken care of for a long time, and it was very old for a board and bat structure. Going in, we were actually going to we looked at a school out in rural Kansas that we were interested in. Then my partner just kind of had a had an epiphany, like, you know what, I'm going to go out and look around one more time. And he did. This place suddenly appeared as being for sale. And, you know, me being someone who has a history education as well, you know, not just science, you know, not just computer science, but, you know, I was immediately drawn to the history once I saw kind of the famous people that had come through there and stayed there when this place was a hotel. Because, you know, when you looked at the place, you're like, well, you know, it's pretty rough. You know, is it savable for one? And, you know, is it a project, you know, that you want to take on? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it was one of those deals where, like, you know, I'll never probably see something like this not already restored or, you know,
right.
In Kansas City, you definitely wouldn't. You know, so it was kind of one of those, like, leap of faith type things that, you know, the place just drew me with its history. And I think the paranormal part kind of came along with it.
Again, my guest is Rob Garcia, and he's part of Elite Paranormal of Kansas City. We'll talk a little bit more about whether you're hoping to bring some more ghost investigators on site and what that involves. 1858 Garnett House Hotel. It's 1858hotel.com.
Garnett's an interesting little town because, you know, really back in the 19th century, it was really a Wild West town like Abilene or Dodge City or Tombstone or any of those kind of places. After reading the history, I didn't know that either. Well, you know, you go there now, it's like, oh, it's real quaint and quiet, you know, but yeah, you know, back in the day, that used to be a really turbulent place.
My guest is Rob Garcia. We're talking ghosts and hauntings and history, Kansas history. This is Garnett, Kansas. We're talking about, we'll talk about more than that, but with the 1858 Garnett House Hotel, Harry Houdini slept here. You'll have to have that room with a little, you know, you don't know exactly where he slept, but somewhere nearby. And we don't know if he's still asleep. He might be awake now and walking the halls, but you can always hope. The fact that there's such incredible local folklore about that, I think, is fascinating. And there's also, if you're not familiar, the Prairie Spirit Trail goes through Garnett. If you want to do that, kansasoutdoors.com or Prairie Spirit Trail, you can find out more about it. If you're interested in doing a bike trail, social distancing right now, this is one of the things that you have an opportunity to kind of go and explore places that don't have a lot of crowds. And this would be one really neat little trail to go bike across. And I thought I would throw that in there because I think that Garnett is supposed to be right in the middle of that trail. And so they could stop and maybe, you know, at least check it out from the outside, see if they're interested in tuning back in later. But you're in a, I think, in a unique situation where even though you didn't count on it, you got that welcoming with a little girl and the door blowing open that says, hey, this is a place you want. I think part of it was drawing you. Did you have that feeling, too, of like a slam dunk?
Yeah, I mean, once, you know, as someone who studied, the Civil War and Missouri and Kansas, and as a major focal point in my education, for me, once, you know, I saw that Wild West history, and not just Wild West, but tied back to the Civil War in the area and Bleeding Kansas that the place has, the little girl kind of blowing the door open and giving us a hello, I think that was just like, wow, this is amazing. I mean, it definitely, you know, if that was the reason to draw us in, I think whoever knew exactly what to do. So that was a nice little surprise.
The other thing too, we were talking a little bit off mic, and you were talking about this place being super active. I think the fact that Harry Houdini was drawn there is a clue that back in the day, this town had a lot going for it.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel itself had a lot of famous people come through there and stay. All the way in its time in the early Civil War in the 1860s, especially through the Wild West era up into the 1870s and the 1880s, it was kind of a who's who of Wild West figures came through there and stayed. So you had people like Bat Masterson, Wyatt Earp both stayed there. Bell Starr said to have stayed there. It's definitely for sure that. You know, we know those folks stayed there. We definitely know that Wild Bill Hickok stayed there several times, as well as Buffalo Bill Cody. And that one time together, because they came in on the train together to do the Wild West show. So it's also rumored that the James Brothers also did come there as well, because they are tied to the area by their friendship with a gentleman who lives south of town, who was one of their friends from their Confederate guerrilla days. And that gentleman actually had a ranch south of Garnett where Quantrill's Raiders and Blaisdell Anderson's companies were said to go and refit and refurbish during the Civil War. And then after the Civil War, that gentleman, his name was John Rutledge, he survived the war and he came back to his ranch south of Garnett. And that same kind of activity continued with the James gang when they were doing their robberies. It was a place they would go and stay off the grid once in a while, since they knew that guy from their time in the Civil War. So, the Garnett House had a bar in it. So it was said they would come down on the train and then they would be met by a gentleman and then they would go down and then they would walk around under assumed names like they always did and frequent all the different places. So it's one of the places to be in Garnett.
Have you had some ghost hunters stay on the site or near the site at this point?
I have had, we have had several teams come in the last couple of years. The main reason why is because that really helps the location get restored. So, we have teams that will come in for a night here and there. Mm-hmm. On our website, you'll see a link for private bookings where folks can come, spend the night and experience the location and kind of see if they run into anything that we've captured.
Well, and that you have some videos
that happened.
Videos on your website too.
Right. Now, some of those are captured from investigators. A lot of them are from our security camera system. So we have security cameras inside and, we do pick up on a lot of things happening, on those security cameras, things like, dolls or balls or stuff like that we've put in there over the time, because we used to live stream this kind of to raise funds early on. Mm-hmm. And we had a website that would do that and they would live stream, hours on end. People would watch these locations. And I was watching a static camera.
Yes.
Waiting for something to happen. But, you know, so we had a lot of, you know, one kind of weird thing happened was that we had, I had brought a beach ball down with that lights up when you kick it or slap it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had bought these for my own children to take to Cancun. So I bought an extra one and took it down to Garnet House. And my partner got sick of kicking it around. So I threw it up in this closet. Now, the weird part about this closet is that building does have a slight lean to it from being so old. So mm-hmm. this closet kind of leans away from the edge. So it leans backwards. So mm-hmm. this ball up in the closet is actually leaning towards the back of the closet. So what we started to have happen was this ball would launch itself out of this closet and roll across the room. And we've captured that probably 15, 20 times on security camera. But the funny part is the first time it happened, there were some friends there from the Joplin area that were there to do kind of like an online fundraiser for us. And they were streaming themselves investigating. And they had a reporter with them from the Joplin area.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never been on an investigation before. She was, you know, an anchor. She was an anchor down there, and her first time out, she's standing there, and this light up beach ball comes flying out of this closet and goes rolling past him. And then it happened again the same night.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing to have happen. And then it did it quite often for a while, and it'll still happen sporadically, but it seems to happen when people are there more frequently.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, I know the place that you're, I know if their energy is charging the place up or the place is recognizing that there's, you know, folks here when it sits empty a lot of the time because, yeah. you know, it's not open during the day yet. So, and then you just never know when you go to these locations and not just the Garnet House, but, you know, over the years, all these places, especially doing these public type events, when you do those, you never, you know, like we always say, well, you can't clap your hands and make spirits come out and dance for you.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, it's just, it's that unexpected thing that happens. That's always kind of the for me, always kind of, I don't know, kind of a present in a way. It's kind of a gift.
Yes.
When that happens.
Yes. And that's the thing. If somebody tells you, oh yeah, it'll happen. It's for sure. It's a done deal. It's like, no, walk away, run. Don't, because there's absolutely no guarantee. There's a lot of things that go into these events and creating something that makes people curious and come back again and again. Mm-hmm. And it's that element of surprise. I want to talk about the Sigma Nu House, the documentary coming up. There was one person on site who told us all sorts of things that he had a difficult time explaining to himself because it didn't mesh with his reality. So we're going to talk about that. Again, my guest, Rob Garcia, Elite Paranormal. Talking ghosts, talking unexplained, talking things that are curious. Maybe they go bump in the night. I don't think so. I think it's 24/7. That's my experience. And there are other factors that play into this, and we don't have all the answers. That's why we're curious and we keep looking. There's a documentary with the focus being on one of the houses at Lawrence, the KU campus, Sigma Nu House. And there have been a lot of rumors. You have the background on that, though. I was just part involved, invited to go along to see what I could pick up on as an intuitive or a psychic. What was the history that that they wanted to figure out a little bit more about what was going on with the Sigma Nu House?
Right. So when we went, it was what, a little bit over a decade ago or so, and investigated two times, two separate years. The history was kind of, you know, there was this legend, kind of folklore around the place about there was a girl named Virginia who was hung against her will on the third floor, supposedly by the wife of the one-time governor of Kansas. His name was Walter Stubbs. This was their private residence, not the governor's mansion, but it's, you know, it was a pretty opulent place back in the day. And supposedly this girl, Virginia, was the spirit that these fraternity brothers, because the place is now a fraternity house, mm-hmm. you know, it's a mansion converted into fraternity. So the kind of the legend was that this spirit of this Virginia, this woman in white, would be seen roaming the halls of Garnet, or Garnet House, got on my head,
yeah.
Sigma Nu, and then these boys would see it. And so there was this legend passed down over many years. And, you know, it wasn't a now thing. It was like over decades where
yeah.
these fraternity brothers would see this woman in white once in a while roaming the halls. So our investigation was to kind of come in and go in and say, and also the background investigation of the history, was there a Virginia and was there a crime committed where, you know, this girl was hung or did she hang herself? You know, was there any validity to any of these claims? So that was kind of the work behind the investigation, the two investigations that we did. The 1 year you and I participated in, and then we came back the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was, you know, definitely an interesting piece of folklore to try and unravel.
Okay. See, the interesting thing I had that happened to me, at one point I heard singing in one of the rooms. I could hear stuff like that. But the first time we were there, my necklace, we were in the room, the pool, where the pool table was at that time. And that my necklace fell off, just disconnected itself and fell off. I thought, okay, yeah, I know you're here. All right. Well, then when we go to do the presentation where you guys give the result, the report on what all was happening and what you discovered, what you heard with the EVP, and I think James Presnell was there and he was doing some other kind of audio type research.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened. Again, the necklace fell off. And I thought, aha. And it didn't dawn on me till later when you're talking about a potential hanging. That there might be a fascination with necklaces and objects that, you know, go around your neck. And the other thing, too, is I didn't know anything about it. And I didn't have any research until afterwards when I heard, you know, your stories of what was going on. But my sense was that the whole lot of gossip there, they might not have had the facts. And it that might have been a convenient to have the person that everybody would have been jealous of, which would have been the wife, that she would be the person who did the deed. But what my own sense was that wasn't the way it went down. And what the kind of information that I had said that it was, you know, one of those things of, it makes a really good gossip story, but there were a lot more elements that went into that behind the scenes who would have had a lot more access and motivation than somebody who was a higher up in the community and really didn't need to do anything else to improve her status. So I think the gossip is interesting, but the kinds of activities that go on there have nothing to do with those three characters. It's a lot of other, you know, a lot of other influence from the many, many multitudes of individuals who have been on that site, around that site, living in that area. So,
yeah,
you know, there's more to it, especially like where you're at. It's a multidimensional thing. There aren't just the people who've been there. There are others that have traveled through and beyond who have left a signature, a trail, and an energy cord that then creates an opportunity for the people who are there who also bring their own energy. Like when I go to a place or you go to a place or whatever, if we have attachments, we're bringing them. They're coming with us. So the night that you do a seance or you do some kind of an event, there may be a few other players that wouldn't show up for anybody else. And that's what I think makes this so exciting and so interesting and fascinating and unexplained.
And, you know, in the place, in that folklore, from a history perspective, we did the research. We went in and looked at the census data from those times when they lived in that building. And we could never find a person named Virginia or even a person that lived in that household that matched that age. So does that mean that there maybe was someone living there that wasn't documented? I mean, that's possible. So, you know, there was nothing really for us to tie back and say, yes, here's Virginia on paper. She lived here. You know, she was a real person. You know, so you will never, I don't know if we'll ever really know unless there was someone alive that can tell you, yes, I knew Virginia, or, you know, was that even her name? Could it have been something else?
Right, right.
And she was living here in this property as maybe a servant girl or something along those lines, because these were, you know, well-to-do folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we'll probably never know officially, like, was there a Virginia that lived there? But I know, you know, we had a lot of activity and a lot of it centered around that senior room. I think that was like a subdivided sewing room probably at one time or something along those lines back when it was a private residence. So,
okay.
There were lots of EVPs in there and lots of different voices that weren't just one person, men, women.
There were multitudes. Yeah. I was going to say the one I did pick up on that's very solid there is an older woman. And she is dressed in, you know, 50s, 40s period clothing where she wears a longer, like an apron. She sits on to me, it would have been the second level there behind the fireplace that there is a room that is her space. She does not see what we see. Basically, we would be shadows to her, but she has a cat and she's almost on a porch like balcony where she's there, and she's a regular. She's a consistent pattern in that space. I have no idea who she is. I just know that, you know, in our, you know, our perception of age, she may be a late 40s, early 50s because she looks older, where I would, you know, attribute that now to maybe 70s. But back then she would have had that age and that range of, but being single, being, you know, a spinster. But not necessarily unhappy about that. To me, she's like a caretaker for that space. And you would feel her because she would tap you on the shoulder and she would be in your space because she's just that kind of gal.
Right. You know, but I think the boys, you know, I'm sure they do see something in there. But, you know, can we attribute that to a documented person? Not at this time.
Yeah.
Not that I believe.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Right. Well, see, that's also something when you go in, you need to dot the I's and cross the T's, and having your background doing the history on it is helpful because then it takes some of the wind out of the sails of people who are perpetuating something that's complete fiction and that is actually derogatory to the people who did live there and who were real. And, you know, kind of it's unfair to keep casting that shadow when there's no evidence and no proof and just, you know, a happy little story that is convenient and this is a bias against the upper class at that time that kind of is what's being perpetuated by that particular piece of gossip. My guest, Rob Garcia, talking about the history, I think is important too, because it gives you a timeline and some of the ideas that people would have had living and deceased about the afterlife. So what are some of the stories? You've got them on the website, and again, the website, 1858hotel.com.
Right. Well, the place was born out of Bleeding, Kansas. So the people that built it were abolitionists from Pennsylvania. So they were involved with John Brown, and that was the center of the Underground Railroad in the area in the late 1850s, like 1858, 1859 period. And it said that John Brown did hide slaves there and move them on to Canada from there, and that was one of their dropping-off points. So you get past that, though, in that period, and then once it's no longer their private residence in the first year, it becomes this hotel. And back in those days, this area was very rough still. It was very being settled by pioneers. So one event that you did have was there was a woman named Sarah Potter who came to the territory around 1860. She was a young woman, unmarried. She met a couple named the Aldermans. They introduced her to a young farmer named Leon Phillips, as was the kind of the day. They had a short courtship and a marriage, and then shortly thereafter, about 6 weeks after, Mr. Phillips died. It turns out that Sarah was buying what they call rabbit poison from the druggist.
Huh.
And rabbit poison is arsenic, the same thing. Uh-huh. So Mr. Phillips died. The sheriff, they only have a sheriff, there's no police in those days, arrests Sarah, arrests the aldermen, quickly releases the aldermen because he doesn't have any proof of any conspiracy. Sarah is kept a prisoner at the Garnet House because there's no jail in the territory. So Sarah becomes a prisoner in the Garnet House for about 4 months. She lives upstairs. She can have friends visit. She eats. You know, back then, you know, when we say hotel, this was more like a big boarding house. So she ate communally with all the other guests downstairs whilst waiting for her trial until a mysterious party comes to town one night and Sarah disappears. Turns out Sarah goes to Cincinnati, marries another gentleman. I don't know if she killed that guy, but for some reason she comes back to Kansas later on and someone figures out who she is and they arrest her and then they have a trial for her in Douglas County and she has a mistrial and is never convicted of the crime and leaves the territory. That's kind of the last you hear of her. But yes, she was a Black Widow murderess. I'm pretty sure she probably did it. She was a prisoner there at the Garnet House because it was kind of a temporary jail for her.
Lizzie Borden isn't the only one who's famous for axe murders.
Yes, this is a kind of a famous event that happened in 1864 in the Garnet House. Now, at that time frame, this was right at the Battle of Westport/Battle of Mine Creek. For those who don't know, the Civil War was happening right in our doorstep here, and the Confederate Army was racing south trying to get to Arkansas when they were caught from behind at Mine Creek, which is about 40 miles to the east of Garnett. So the problem though you have in Garnett is everyone's terrified of Confederate raiders because Quantrill and those folks are known to operate in the area. So they're hiding all their valuables. They're burying everything because most of the young men are gone way in the Civil War. So how this ties back to the Garnett house was in the attic, there was a black freedman, an African-American. His name was John Warren. He was D.W. Houston, who was the builder of the Garnett house. He was one of his hand servants. Mm-hmm. So he worked for Mr. Houston. I'm not sure if he just did odd jobs around the place. But at the same time, something on, there was a lecturer who came to town. His name was Dr. Derby. He was a phrenology professor. A phrenology professor, for those who don't know, the study of the shape of your head determines your intellect. Mm. Back then, you know, that kind of lecture, a lot of people would turn out for. That's like, you know, the movie showing up. So there's a woman down the street. Her name was Mrs. Adeline Duren. She's an original settler of Garnett. She lives there with her two grown children. Her son's away. Her daughter goes to the lecture. And mom stays home reading by the fire. So this gentleman, John Warren, also is going to go to this lecture. So he leaves the hotel and makes his way down towards this place they were having the lecture. But on the way there, he passes Mrs. Duren's house. And he sees Mrs. Duren reading by the fire inside the window. So he goes to the woodpile and gets an axe and goes inside and hits Mrs. Duren over the back of the head with the blunt end of the axe, knocking her unconscious. And then it's said that he had his way with her and then begins to rob the place. So in the midst of the robbery, Mrs. Duren wakes up, tries to escape, and that's when John hits her with the blade end of the axe, nearly severing her head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he feels remorse or panic about what he's done, but he throws the axe in the woodpile and he runs back towards the Garnett house and to the attic where his room is. But along the way, he's seen by an African-American boy they call named Robert. That's only how he's referred to as Robert.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert sees John going back. John Warren goes up to his room, goes to sleep. Mrs. Adeline's grown daughter comes back from the lecture, finds mother, puts out the alarm. All the men that are still in town start racing around trying to figure out who could do the crime. They run into Robert, this boy. And Robert says, well, I saw John Warren coming from there. So they go up to the attic of the Garnett house. They go up in there. They find John, supposed asleep, and supposed to have bloody clothes. So they pull him out of the Garnett house, take him downtown, where eventually he gives a confession for the crime, and he eventually has a trial. And then he is hung for the crime downtown from the rafters of the unfinished jail downtown. Because they still didn't have a jail yet. Said thousands turned out for this hanging. So it even made the New York Times in a day. So John Warren, you know, he hangs for the crime. And in a weird kind of twist, they gave his body to the Negro community for burial, but it said they gave his head away to this Dr. Derby, this phrenology professor, for study.
So, kind of a weird twist to that.
But, you know, I ran into folks, descendants who don't think that John Warren really did the crime. You know, there's always a possibility, even though this was abolitionist territory, there's always a possibility that maybe he was a scapegoat,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this is a documented event. This is in the history of the area.
Wow.
That this really happened. So, you know, John Warren lived in the attic. He committed an act where he didn't do it on the premises, but, you know, so ultimately he paid for the crime.
Okay.
You know, a little bit of weird history there.
Yeah, so for people who want to go sleep in that place, are you still doing this right now during this time?
Yes, because we really have small amount of people that come for these events. And, you know, typically people that are well-connected with each other. So
part of a group,
you know,
already.
So we practice some protocols when we're handing off the place and giving the history, but, you know, they're usually, you know, already know each other quite well, most of these folks.
Plus, you're already isolated because this isn't an operational hotel. This is a place that's being restored.
Right.
And
it's a historic landmark.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. And you have an out time, an end time? When do you expect to be possibly going?
I think we're taking it year by year. We're trying to knock out a big project yearly, kind of the path that we've taken on.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about funding, how much money we can raise for each project. So instead of kind of like a big bang you know, implementation where I'm totally rehabbing the building one time. It's like this last year and this year, the building's been, and so the woodwork and taking care of outside. And then once that happens, then we'll start to move into the interior and different spots will be addressed and things will be kind of fixed as we go. Now, this place is 162 years, so it's never going to look like
right.
the Savoy or the Taj Mahal, but definitely we're trying to get it back to its old West style days. It was a doctor's office for 60 years, so there's a lot of kind of clinical effects, kind of clinical leftovers from that period.
Mm-hmm.
Husband and wife doctors practiced in there from the 1950s all the way up to the 21st century. So they left a lot of things behind. Like, we still have an x-ray table and a laboratory. So, there's an x-ray development closet and things like that.
So, ambiance.
There's a little bit of that era as well. So we're going to make sure that, we pay tribute to them and that era of the hotel, because that's quite a bit of its history. A lot of people in the town still only know the place as, the doc's office. So we definitely, we try to make sure that we pay tribute to them as well.
My guest is Rob Garcia, and he's from Elite Paranormal, or with Elite Paranormal of Kansas City, a ghost hunting group. And they've been around a block a time or two, knowing what's going on and how to do a ghost investigation. The EVPs, I remember that's what Rob was, that was his specialty. Now, when you're doing EVPs, just real quick, electrical voice phenomena, right?
Electronic voice phenomena, yeah.
Okay, electronic. All right. How do you get started with that? I know Sarah Estep is one of the ones I was familiar with, and she had a little tape recorder that she would just get, results on with a little mini mm-hmm. handheld recorder type thing. Your equipment is a little bit more professional than that. Does that make a difference?
I think, truth be told, I use myself some older audio recorders that I started out with because I always got the best results with them. Now, I could go buy studio recording level audio recorders, and I have those, but I actually really go back and use my older Olympus ones that I have that seem to get, for some reason, they just seem to pick up more when it comes to electronic voice phenomena, because they're, you're recording at a subhuman level of hearing is what you're looking for. So this is stuff we're not going to hear with our human ears. It's going to be after I go and review this. This audio after the fact. So it's kind of a discipline of looking for electronic voice phenomenon. I think you kind of have to get an ear for it and know what you're looking for, and being able to kind of pull things out of the white noise a little bit, because mm-hmm. a lot of times they're buried in white noise. And then sometimes they're just as loud as me talking right now. You never know. It's always, always different. It's always kind of the same. It just depends on each place and then it's how lucky you are at that time that you're there.
Have you ever
talking to you.
Have you ever heard things like on the television, like, fractured sentences or voice on telephone or television? Have you ever had that kind of thing happen?
Yes. That's one of the disciplines that I studied pretty heavily. I worked with a remote viewer for a lot of years, a lot of investigations. For those who don't know, remote viewing is he's in another location in another part of the country. He calls into my investigation, like a two-way call, like a conference call on speakerphone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he helps me investigate, and he gives me his impressions and where he thinks I should go, and what he's feeling, what he's seeing. And he's very good. And but one of the side effects of that is we would get voices through the cell phone, through the calls, and they're talking about things we're doing. So
yeah.
it's not like it's just some guy, that just somehow was able to break into our phone call.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very strange, and it's a phenomenon that we've, encountered quite a few times. But, if they're able, we feel like, they're able to manipulate different electromagnetic spectrums. Cell phones is in that range as well. So it's one of those things that somehow they're able to project themselves through the phone, and we've captured it many times. One instance was I was investigating and he was telling me where to go, and we were in this private residence, and he says, "Well, I feel like there's a lady that's still there. And if you take your EMF meter and point it toward this spot," and he doesn't see this place. He's in California. So he has me waving this meter around in midair, and all of a sudden through the cell phone, this woman, old woman's voice comes through and goes, "Don't touch me." So you know, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because he can't hear it. It's always one way as well in that phenomenon. So only I hear it, and then he hears them on his side as well.
Okay.
That I don't hear. So it's, and we record all that just because of those phenomena that we began to experience.
Well, there's another,
many of those.
The other aspect, though, is, you know, this also a sense, like, you smell something, an odor, or sometimes it'll be like, I remember a floral fragrance. All of a sudden, this floral fragrance, I'm like, oh, there's somebody here. Okay. Those are little cues, and you get those as well, don't you?
I typically, for me, you know, and I didn't really notice this till after I'd been investigating for several years, is for me, I kind of always get kind of almost like a sinus pressure type feeling when I go to places that I feel have a high level activity, and I just get the sense like, you know, the energy is shifted in this place and there's something going on that I can't see. And, you know, I can kind of feel that when it happens. So those are kind of the senses I typically get when I feel like there's activity about to happen, or there's things going on that are, you know, the moving of that are unseen. Or, you know, it's always kind of an energy shift for me, and I kind of feel that. And, you know, it wasn't always when I started, but now after so many years, and, you know, I used to do 2 investigations a month for years. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of investigating, a lot of private residences, a lot of historic landmarks. So it's just something that built up over time that I'm able to kind of get a feel for.
Oh, I agree. The more, because after the repetition, you sense a theme and you become more familiar with your own personal cues. I don't think you can tell somebody else, okay, this is what you're going to feel. This is how it's going to work. And that doesn't, for me, that doesn't make any sense, because people are activated by different types of phenomena. And I know that when I was sensing certain things, I might get hot, cold tingles. Again, that sinus pressure or even images. And there are so many ways that you can tune into this that you have to understand what your own personal biorhythms are. And that's a big factor, I think, that you can't just project this on everybody else, that each person's going to have the same interaction. They don't. Some people get nauseous ahead of time. They might feel possibly dizzy or even... I've had some cases where I felt all of a sudden just energized and electrified, like, whoa, this is, you know, hyper because of the energy of the space. There's a great article on you in the LA Times, and this is about talking about the different experiences you've had. I don't know, it's probably old hat by now, but this is one from the LA Times that was talking about you and saying that ghost hunting is an uncertain science and boring in real life. Now, shame on you.
Well, I didn't choose that title, but the gentleman did interview me for the LA Times, and that ran in syndicate in a lot of places, I think. But and then that story article, I kind of talked about, you know, I think television kind of gives this field this idea that you're going to walk into a place and, you know, things are going to come pouring out of the walls at you. And I'm not saying that couldn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone many places where things happen, like, you know, like crazy. And I've gone places where I sat and stared at the wall all night and not a thing happened, but that doesn't mean I didn't record anything.
Yes.
Or anything I was running, you know, all the devices that I'm running that are doing video, audio, all those types of recordings. That doesn't mean I didn't capture anything. I was trying to convey to him that it's a field of patience and you have to have patience. It can be sometimes, and I told him, like, sometimes it's boring. You sit quietly talking to the air and nothing's happening. And you're thinking, you know, there's nothing going on here. But that's not always true. For some reason he picked up on that and took that as the title of, you know, uncertain science and boring, but it's something you have to just be patient and diligent with and to get results. And that was what I was trying to convey to him.
Okay. It certainly gets your attention. What? Boring? Okay. Well, it depends on your perspective and what you're doing. If you're trying to, you know, get something very quick on your tape recorder in the next 15 minutes, then you may have to be, you know, there for a few nights and working more than 15 minutes. again, it's different for everyone when you go into a place and it's haunted. And somebody may tell you, oh my gosh, I had these incredible experiences. And then you go and you don't have any kind of experience at all. This isn't a guarantee that have happened. It's like the Sigma Nu house in Lawrence. There are many stories. And as a matter of fact, when I was there during that investigation back in, oh my gosh, it's been 10 years. It doesn't seem that long, but it has. When we were doing that, there was a person who was there who had a lot of experiences, and he was just absolutely going, this isn't possible. And yet it kept happening. And feeling it being touched, having things happen while he turned his back, and things would be moved, and he would hear sounds and go back and see something had been moved. And he's trying to figure out how to reconcile this with his beliefs and his reality. I think the purpose of doing the documentary right now is to give some other perspective, saying if you have this experience, you're not crazy. You're just having an expanded view and an opportunity to take a look at reality from a different direction. It's not all physical here. There are some other things that happen we don't have explanations for, and it just means they are real too.
Definitely, because I think, I was telling you, I did a lot of private residences over the years, and I go to, every time you go to someone's private residence, you're not only taking on their spirits or whatever is happening in their house, or if they don't really have any, that's always a possibility too. Because you never know what their motives are.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to do your diligence before you go to a location. And we don't slide down a pole and jump in a ghost mobile and arrive right that night, unfortunately.
Darn.
But I do a lot of we ask a lot of questions, and we ask for a lot of things from people before we'll arrive, for their safety and ours. But when you do those investigations, you're taking on, their psychology as people and a family, as well as whatever spirits they might be, or paranormal activity they're supposedly experiencing. So they might be the only ones that are going to experience it. It might just be designed only for them. There might be some sort of connection that we're not aware of that's trying to get their attention.
Right.
And so for us, we might show up and there'd be nothing happen. Nada. And that doesn't mean though that they're not experiencing these things.
Right. Yeah,
it's just that we're not always going to get that same experience.
You can't give them the validation that they need. And that doesn't mean it isn't real. There's an interesting thing. I was helped somebody out with an event one time, and the young boy, and I've told this story before, the young boy was autistic, and the mom was at one point, she knew that he was experiencing things that they couldn't corroborate, but they wanted something, a clue of what might be going on. So I was there to talk with him about some things. And one of the things she told me, though, was at one point she had him on her lap, and she witnessed this orange, like an orange glow, start coming through the front door. And from that orange glow, outside of that glow, which is basically a portal, there she sees this group of people come through, almost like a conga line. The first person had a tray of dinnerware and walking or kind of, just gandering through the room with people behind her. And it was Civil War or period clothing. That house wasn't haunted, but it did have a cemetery down the road, and it did have another child presence who was there playing with this child as well. And the one time, though, she could see this, he happened to be her son sitting on her lap. So she was in his space, and it allowed her, I thought, a window, a vantage point that only because she was in his energy did she have access. If she had not been, in that space, she wouldn't have been able to see it. And it didn't happen again. But so that's another thing too. When you have certain people present who amplify these scenes, you might have the ability to see their, what they're seeing, to see from their viewpoint. And I know this isn't your topic, but I just wanted to add that in there, that sometimes you get a window because you're in the right place at the right time, and somebody else there is highly intuitive or highly perceptive, and you get glimpse to say your reality might be actually not identical than the people around you. And I think that's helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely, you always come into these places yourself and you think like, well, and I always had this thought, especially after so many years of doing them, like, does me being an investigator and going to all these places throughout the country and these private homes am I somehow, by just showing up, influencing what they're experiencing in the house without really trying?
Yeah.
You know, am I bringing certain energies with me that makes all these, if there are spirits or residents or whatever you want to call them, are they all going to stop and turn and look at me the minute I walk in? Because, you know, I'm bringing something they, you know, they can't, they know, but they, it's like a light type thing.
Yeah.
Because you have been involved with this so much. And that's always been kind of a thought and kind of an area I've always wanted to explore even more, you know, what being exposed to these things so much and through so much time, you know, are you going to, you know, basically bring a cavalry with you when you go to places, you know, are you just picking up people that come along with you?
Yeah. You see, for me, I think what you add to it, especially, you know, you're not a tire kicker. You don't call yourself a ghost hunter. You call yourself more of a paranormal researcher, and you try to do your due diligence with not jumping to conclusions and not projecting something before you have more information. You just sit mm-hmm. back and wait for the reveal. I think that's huge. So in that way, what you're presenting, in my perspective, is a grounding and a security and a validation of, okay, is there something we need to be afraid of? And in that LA Times article, you said, hey, you're more likely to run into Casper than you are in you know, the poltergeist or something, because most of these events are non-threatening. And it's more or less, you know, just in the space where you can say, well, it's an active space. There's more energy here. So just be aware and don't jump to conclusions that something's trying to harm you.
Well, I know I've always puzzled many a newer investigator when I always tell them, you know, I go into a place and I don't expect a spirit or ghost that just haunts a three-dimensional space and can't leave it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them, you know, they go, I'm going into this house or this building or whatever it is. And, you know, Susie, the ghost, just roams these three rooms and that's all she can do. I don't believe that at all. I believe they're coming and going, and
yeah.
they because they want to be there, and at certain times. I don't think they're there all the time. So, you know, it's somehow a projection. And is it even all of this person? Is it a piece of this person? Maybe they're somewhere else at the same time, or multiple places at the same time, because we don't understand that what happens to us completely once we pass on and we become energy.
And
we do
yes.
that.
And that's where the afterlife investigations come in, you know, the people who have near-death experiences or people who have reincarnation experiences and say, this is what happened in between. This is where I went. This is what I did. This is what I could see. And when you have out-of-body experiences and you see yourself as a ball of light and as a physical, non-physical being, you still have the shape, you still have the kind of the clothes that you would wear, but you're not, you're transparent. And then you go back into your body and go, whoa, okay. New deck of cards.
Yeah.
Okay. You have so many stories, and especially I like the fact that the history is a part of your framework, and you're, you know, familiar with what goes on and what went on here during the Civil War and all of that, which makes, I think, this area highly active. I mean, that's what your sense is, that a lot of this trauma drama that happened here also adds to that energy that we have for hauntings.
Well, I think so, because I tend to always have more investigations in the older parts of town. And a lot of places, a lot of areas like Independence, you know, Kansas City, Missouri, a lot of areas that were much more kind of fought over during the Civil War. You know, and the Civil War here was not, you know, I mean, it happened, but it wasn't mass armies lined up shooting at each other. It was more neighbor against neighbor, that kind of warfare. So I think that kind of generates its own kind of legacy, kind of turbulence, so to speak, that, you know, not only exists today, even in a history perspective, but it exists today, I think, in kind of this paranormal perspective, where I think that a lot of the investigations that I've done over the years kind of tend to revolve around that. And since now you have this major city, Kansas City, that's grown up and built over the top of a lot of these locations, I still think that there's some tie-in to that turbulence of those times that seem to happen around those events of the Civil War, guerrilla warfare, you know, occupation by a occupying army, those kind of things that happen. You know what I mean? I don't get that many investigations in Johnson County.
Yeah.
It's a newer area. It's been built up, you know, since after the Civil War. A lot of it's more those old parts of town and the areas that were well fought over. For some reason, those I have more calls from people from those areas. It's just one of those things.
With the exception of a place that used to be an antique shop.
Yeah. And that place, there was a doctor's office for a long time.
Yeah.
And so, he did operate out of there, not to mention all those antiques that had been piled in there on top of that.
Yeah.
That energy. So that was a very interesting place. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Very active. Okay. So on the happy note with Stella, you had a spirit box that you connected to. And you said you actually spoke with Stella at the Sigma Nu House in Lawrence, Kansas. What did Stella say, or do you remember?
Yeah, I did use a spirit box. For those who don't know, a spirit box is kind of a radio-type device that just bounces between frequencies at a high rate of speed. You never pick up really any radio. It's just ee-ha-ooh-ah-ah. So we find that we get responses using this device over time. Now, it's a different discipline. It's not really the same as you're picking up a ghost or a spirit in a location. You're trying to communicate with someone from the other side that we can't really understand completely.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, Stella, I'm asking if Stella, are you here? And then I'm getting these responses. Like I said, in this woman's voice says, yes, I'm here. And then after that, I kind of ask a line of questions about, are you stuck here in this house? Can you leave? And I'm getting responses like, I can leave, things along those lines in the same voice. But I also have a men's voice inside in the audio going, Stella, more like these, like, Stella, don't, and things like that. Like, don't talk to him, that sort of thing. So I felt like there were people like trying to tell her, hey, don't talk to him.
Yeah.
And then there's others. And she's telling me, no, I'm not stuck here. I can leave anytime I want to. So if Stella's there, maybe that's just the place she likes to be.
Yeah.
From time to time, it was probably the peak of her life, having that mansion, I can imagine, and being at one time First Lady of Kansas. So, maybe she likes to come back and visit. Doesn't really realize there's fraternity guys wandering around in her own space. So.
Oh, that might be why she wants to go back and visit. She can stir up a whole lot
that
of trouble with a minimal amount of effort. For people who are curious about what you do, the best way to contact you, you've got Facebook, you've got the hotel, Garnett Hotel. What's the best website you want to recommend?
So if you want to contact me about the hotel, go to www.1858hotel.com. There's links there to all the social media as well. Also, if you're interested in Elite Paranormal of Kansas City, go to www.eliteparanormalkc.com. That'll direct you to my website, and it also has links to all the social media from there as well. You can go to Facebook and chat there as well. So that's the best way to get a hold of us. I hope you come visit the 1858 Garnett House Hotel because it's a great piece of history.
I appreciate your time, Rob.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And whatever you're doing now, remember, anything's possible. Keep your mind open. If you haven't experienced a ghost, that doesn't mean they're not there. It just means you haven't experienced a ghost. So anything could happen, and you could experience a ghost, especially, it sounds like, if you go to the 1858 Garnett House Hotel. Thanks for listening.